Chapter 28. Thursday promised to be one of those sweltering days of which the Levin spoonful sang. Sarah could feel it lying in bed at 6:30 in the morning. Her apartment was old, and the only air conditioning came from what she could cram in the window. Her own unit was currently in storage in the basement because it took up too much space when it wasn't running. She'd have to haul it up and put it in. She'd have to do it before she left for work if she didn't want to return to an oven. Sighing, she got up, washed her face, put on some old comfy Levi's that were just starting to wear through in places, a sweatshirt, her beat-up hiking shoes, grabbed a pair of canvas gloves and descended 5 flights to the basement where she had a storage space among many others, protected by a master padlock. The basement was dark and filthy. She got the lock open and wrestled the air conditioner close to the door, but no way would she be able to cart it up single-handed. It wasn't the weight. She could handle the weight. It was just too awkward. She needed another set of hands. Where would she find one in this zoo? There was Matt, the janitor, but he was likely still sleeping it off, and he looked as if he'd keel over from a thrombo any day. Frustrated, Sarah ascended to ground level, forcing open the creaking service door at the back of the corridor and stalking out into the foyer in search of Muscle. And there, parked by the curb in his 79 Chevy, was Jorge. When she got to the car, she saw that Jorge was sleeping, his seat back reclined, legs up on the dash, wearing Ray-Bans and a raspberry beret. The windows were open. She reached in and shook his leg. He came awake with a start. Huh? What's up? Jorge. What are you doing here? He looked at her, took off the shades, rubbed his eyes with a fist, put the shades back on. He lay back for a minute until Juice reached the spark plugs. Officer Pezzini. Just doing what we discussed, looking out for the folks. You've been sleeping out here all night? He glanced at his fake Rolex. Since about 4, that's when I called it quits. I figure the people know my ride, nobody's gonna try nothing with me out front. The only people who ever tried anything were Los Romeros, Sarah thought. But she smiled. You're just the man I want to see. Help me carry my air conditioner up from the basement and I'll buy you an Egg McMuffin. Sure, okay. Just give me a minute to get my stuff together. I'm in the basement. Sarah returned to the basement, eyeing a box full of vinyl records that had belonged to her father. Might be worth something on eBay, she thought. Moments later, Jorge appeared at the end of the dusty corridor. Yo, mamacita? Where you at? Down here. Together, they carried the air conditioner out of the storage locker. Jorge held it while Sarah set the lock, insisted on carrying it solo to the freight elevator at the back of the building. She let him show off. It was too hot to argue. He mounted the thing in her bedroom window, accepted a cold Diet Pepsi. What's that on your arm? She asked. Jorge looked down. Which arm? The right one. He stared at his bicep. Our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. What cha got on your stomach? He peered at her, half smiling through his bandito mustache. You really want to see? Sure. Don't be bashful. Jorge peeled off his muscle shirt. He had the hard, lean body of a greyhound, ribs you could climb like a ladder, six-pack like rolled nagahide. A heavy crucifix was tattooed on his abdomen, its base in his groin. The Lord's cross. I got a skull on my right arm. He turned. Sarah made a little spinning motion with her finger. Forget the skull. Are you a Christian? I'm Catholic. Most us Rickons are Catholic. Ain't you? I mean, you been Italian and all. Yeah, I am, although it's been a long time since I've been to confession. Me too, Chiquita. You're a gangbanger. Jorge started to protest, but Sarah held her hand up and continued. I'm a cop. I appreciate this turnaround you've pulled off, but I'm not sure what's behind it. I don't believe in miracles. Now anything you've done in the past, I don't want to know, unless it becomes a police issue. I guess what I'm saying is, I'm suspicious. I've been a cop a while, and in my experience, hardened street criminals very seldom change direction. You know what I mean? Jorge listened with an open face that reminded Sarah of a dog. I ain't no hardened street criminal. You look like one. The way you wear those pants, drooping down to your butt, that's prison style. You can understand where loud music and hanging out on the stoop would scare some of the residents. Oh sure, that's what I'm telling you, Chiquita, I'm down with what you're saying. I know there ain't no future in hanging out, dealing a little dope from time to time, not to say I done it. I mean, I know people who do, but I don't consider them hardcore street criminals. See, then we got a problem. I catch anybody selling, doing, or holding dope on these premises, and I personally will make sure they go away for a long time. Jorge stared at her for a minute with large liquid eyes.
Okay, okay, yeah, okay. I mean, what the hell? I'm 26. I got to think of my future.
That's right. Thought what you're going to do?
I don't know. I'm a pretty good carpenter, but man, trying to get into the union.
I hear you. Maybe I can help. In the meantime, I want you to do something for me.
What's that,
pretty lady? Think about what you want to do for a living that's legal. I have to kick you out now while I get ready for work. She was glad she didn't say, think about what you want to be when you grow up.
Happy to oblige.
Say, how's about you and me checking out this salsa band over at La Hacienda Saturday night? She smiled, placed a hand on his gleaming bicep.
I'm sorry, I'm seeing someone.
Brave smile.
That's okay. You get bored with him sooner or later.
She watched him swagger down the hall toward the elevator. Lupe watched in disbelief and fury from her bedroom window as the witch roused her man from his car. 25 minutes later, her fury metastasized into murderous intent. She'd been holding off, out of fear of acting too soon.
Too soon after the last debacle.
Not this time. This time the witch would die, and her faithless lover too. Sarah arrived at her desk by 9. There was a message from Brandon Stern. His Honor is very keen to hear of the latest developments in the Chalmers investigation. Please contact soonest. Don't forget to RSVP. Sighing, Sarah RSVP'd before turning on her word processor and preparing a report for the mayor. As if she didn't have anything better to do, she said that she had interviewed Chalmers' wife and at least one of his ex-wives, and ruled them out as potentials, but that Chalmers had been receiving harassing emails regarding the sword. She was checking these out. There was nothing in the report about Sharp. At 11:30, Detective Karabak asked her to participate in a lineup involving a high-priced hooker suspected of lifting a rack of diamonds from a Jewish geezer in a hotel. Sarah recognized Bernadette Goins from Vice made up like a streetwalker, winked at her. The geezer fingered Sarah.
Tough luck, detective, she told Karabak.
When she returned to her desk, someone had crazy glued a plastic samurai warrior with the word balloon, boo. A samurai ghost. Isn't that just lovely, and so tasteful? The samurai came off with a single twist.
You guys are slipping.
She announced to the other detectives, all of whom were studiously involved in reports or yakking on the phone. It was time to beard the lion in his den. Specifically, it was time to call on Robert Hotchkiss. It was Sarah's experience that persons of social standing would often cooperate rather than embarrass themselves in front of their colleagues. Hotchkiss worked for the Dynasty Group, with offices in Hex 12 South Plaza. Sarah left her bike at the station and caught a ride uptown with a Cheetah Express driver. He dropped her off right in front. Sarah carried a leather Haverhill briefcase as camouflage. In taupe Armani slacks, olive-ribbed cotton short-sleeved pullover, and khaki jacket, she was indistinguishable from hordes of other bright young things on the make. The Dynasty Group was on the 12th floor. The receptionist stared at Sarah's badge as if it were the Hope Diamond.
Point me to Mr. Hotchkiss, please, and don't say anything.
I will be discreet. The receptionist pointed. Hotchkiss was on the phone when Sarah appeared in his office doorway, to his astonishment. First he was pleased, then flummoxed, finally distressed when he recognized her.
Phil, I'll have to call you back.
He hung up.
Come in and shut the door, please.
What can I do for you? Mr. Hotchkiss, I'm aware that you're involved in divorce proceedings, and I understand your need for discretion. But this is a homicide investigation. I believe you phoned in the tip about Bachman's death. I believe you went there that morning to discuss with him the sale of a sword your father brought back from Iwo Jima. Hotchkiss stared at her for a minute, then leaned his elbows on his desk and buried his face in his hands.
You have no idea the strain I've been under.
Tell me what happened, Sarah said softly.
You're right. Bachman was handling a sword for me. My father brought it back from the war.
He was a Marine sergeant.
I never told Janet about it.
Janet. That's my soon-to-be bitch of an ex-wife. I'm leveraged to my eyeballs. She finds out, or her attorney, they'll go after it.
I got two kids in college. I got a nut you wouldn't believe.
I feel for you, Mr. Hotchkiss. I'll try and keep your name out of it, but it would be helpful if you told me what happened when you discovered the body.
Everything you can remember.
There's a murderer running around.
I know.
All right.
Hang on.
He picked up his phone and instructed the secretary they were not to be disturbed. My father found the sword in a cave on Mount Suribachi. Technically,
They weren't supposed to be trophy hunting, but everyone was doing it. He kept it in the attic for decades. He used to clean and oil it on occasion, and he would bring it out and show it at parties. He stopped showing it in the early 70s, he knew it was worth something. He died in 1989 and the sword came to me. I took it into Bachmann to be appraised. It's my understanding that sword appraisers are few and far between. That's right. Bachmann couldn't issue a certificate, but he knew enough to recognize what it was. He said he could find a buyer. What was it? The swordsmith was Muramasa. Apparently, there are two distinct lines of Muramasas. This was the later one, who was active in the 15th century. I'd been keeping the sword in a safety deposit box here at Dynasty since my father's death. A couple of months ago, David finally managed to work it into his polishing schedule. I decided to sell it and took it over to Bachmann 2 weeks ago. Last week, I'd made an appointment to discuss the terms of the sale. Bachmann was nervous about trying to keep the whole thing secret from my wife and her bastard lawyers. You don't move an item that expensive in this town without someone noticing. Did he have a buyer in mind? Yes, but he wouldn't tell me over the phone. I got there around 10 o'clock and the place seemed closed. Nobody answered the bell, but the gate was unlocked when I tried it. So I went in. I didn't notice the blood until I fell on my ass. I nearly fainted. It's the most shocking thing I've ever witnessed. It's the worst thing that's ever happened to me. If that's the worst thing that's ever happened to you, Sarah thought, you are one lucky bastard. Tell me exactly what happened. Hotchkiss walked her through his grisly discovery. He ran a hand through his thinning hair. And there on the counter was the head, planted on the receipt spindle. Do you know Scott Chalmers? I've met him a couple times. I wouldn't say we were close friends. How do you know James Bratton? Dynasty maintains a skybox. Bratton came to us for a loan. He wanted to buy 5 Wendy's. I'm his loan officer, and I've always been a huge NBA fan. And the Jets. And the Yankees. What about the Giants and the Mets? Hotchkiss shrugged. Screw 'em. I can't be all things to all people. Sarah smiled in spite of herself. You did place the 911. Hotchkiss nodded. Payphone in the Cafe Belladonna. I don't suppose, if you find my sword, there's any chance you could return it to me? After the disposition of the case, you can petition to have it returned from the police evidence lab. However, that's open to the public, so your wife might find out. Might. There's no might about it. Who's her lawyer? Elrin Dubois. You have my sympathies. I would appreciate copies of any documentation you have concerning the sword. I'd also like pictures, drawings, descriptions, anything like that. Hotchkiss leaned forward, opened the bottom right drawer of his desk and began to rummage. Sarah looked around. Pictures of his 2 kids, smiling, fresh-faced boy and girl. Pictures of the treacherous wife had been removed. Pictures of Hotchkiss and some pals on a golf course. Certificates of achievement and appreciation. A crystal ball. Be nice if it worked, she thought. We could have avoided this mess. Hotchkiss handed her a legal envelope with Bachmann's old-fashioned script. There's the description he gave me last week. I don't understand. If he had the sword, and you had the description, why did you go visit him? He said he had a buyer, but he didn't feel comfortable discussing it over the phone. Why not? He was a peculiar man. For example, do you know he had a bagel and cream cheese, a grapefruit, and a vanilla yogurt for breakfast every morning? I don't see what's so strange about that. Every morning of his life, for 35 years, without exception? It's odd. I grant you. But I don't see why he was afraid to mention the buyer's name to you over the phone. I don't know. Maybe he thought his phones were bugged. Sarah's eyes opened imperceptibly. Thank you, Mr. Hotchkiss.